All right, I think it's working now, so we'll pick up from where I'm at. So, Numbers chapter 11 is where we're at now that we got batteries that are working in this thing. And the people were complaining, right? And shocker, that's all they did. They were complaining. And so, as I'm reading through this, God had kind of just given me some different things. And so, I'll kind of read a little bit. They're complaining, and it displeased the Lord. You know, shocker again. You know, they complain, he gets mad. It seems like to be the recurring theme over these last few chapters, right? And it says, the people cried unto Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord. And so it goes on. And then in verse 10, something happens that is kind of new, right? It's kind of different from what usually Moses, this is kind of what we talked about at the end of last week, he like stands in the gap for these people. He's always the leader that wants to take the blame for them. He wants to stand in the gap for them, right? And something happens here at the in verse 10. And so, just to kind of fast forward where we're at, and it says, then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased, and that's just different because generally Moses is like, oh, don't be mad at him, God. You know, just they're not the smartest people, right? But just have some grace on them, right? And that's just how I picture this going. And it said in verse 11, and Moses said unto the Lord, wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of this people upon me? Moses kind of is, the complaining has rubbed off on him. And he's like, what did I do to ask for the burden of these people? Because they are, you want to kill them all the time, God. And so don't be mad at me, because what did I do? Why do I have to deal with this? That's what he's asking. And in verse 12, he says, have I conceived all this people? Have I begotten them that thou shouldest say unto me, carry them in my bosom as a nursing father, bearing the sucking child unto the land that thou swearest unto their fathers? When should I have flesh to give all the people? For they weep unto me, saying, give us flesh that we may eat. I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it's too heavy for me. And if thou deal thus with me, kill me. Just kill me. This is so horrible, right? Pity party, you know. I'm sure none of us have ever been there where it's like, this ministry, God, I didn't ask for this. Just get rid of me. This is horrible, right? He says, I pray thee, out of thy hand am I find favor in thy sight, and let me not see my wretchedness. So something new is happening. It's kind of a different thing. And so I had some things in mind, and so here's kind of where I'm at. It says in verse 16, and the Lord said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be elders of the people, and officers of them, and bring them into the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. And I will come down and talk with thee there. What? Talk with thee there, and I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, and I will put it upon them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that they bear not thyself alone. So I kind of want to stop there. So here's the first question. I just have some questions out of these things that I was just kind of asking myself as I'm reading through them. And so when I read this, I picture like a pastor or a leader, right? Like Moses was. He 99% of the time did the right thing, right? He stood in the gap for his people. He took the burden upon himself. He never complained. He never did anything. But you know what? At the end of the day, he's human. And, you know, he has to be human because there was only one person that was perfect, and that was Christ. So he's human, and he stumbles. Well, I don't know if you knew this, and I love Brian Hedges to death, but he's human. And I'm sure there's times where he stumbles a little bit, right? And not that I've ever seen it, but... And so, you know, he's bearing the burden of the people, right? And so as I'm reading this, you know, the pastors, the leaders around here, they carry a lot. I mean, some of these guys are teaching 5 and 6 times a week in different areas, right? And praise the Lord that they're standing the gap. And so the question I ask myself, right? And it's right there out of verse 17, and it says, and they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. So here's just the question that I had, right? Because I just had devotional questions for thought, right? Am I adding to or helping bear the burden, right? Am I adding to or helping bear the burden? Now, I'm not saying that the church needs everybody to just jump up and say, well, I'll teach, or I'll do this, or I'll do that, right? I don't think Brian needs somebody to jump up there and preach for him on Sunday. But there's a lot of burden that goes around, right? There's a lot of burden that goes around. And a lot of times we look at it like, well, that's just the people at the church got to deal with that. The people that... So we don't want to be... We don't want to get caught in the... And I don't want to get caught in the... We show up to church because that's what we're supposed to do, and then we roll out and we come back next week and we expect the carpet to be vacuumed and we expect the floors to be mopped. We expect all the things, the simple things to be done, right? And we just, well, yeah, that's how it's supposed to work, right? I expect somebody to be there to watch my kids. I expect somebody to be there to get my coffee ready, you know, and it's just like... We kind of treat this church thing like a service, you know. And so, am I adding to or am I helping bear the burden, right? I was talking to Tyler Scholes the other day last week. It was a really sweet time. I don't know if you guys know Tyler that well, but Tyler and I and Jennifer and Paige and really our families, we kind of grew up in the Lord together. And you know, they're definitely helping bear the burden of what's going on at New Life right now. It's a new church, and there's not a lot of people that are seasoned enough to do any. Thing, right? And so, you know, Brad's up there and he's preaching his butt off, and you know, he just needs somebody to help bear the burden. That's kind of who came to my mind when I was reading this, but and it kind of started made me think. So, am I helping? Am I adding to? Or am I helping bear the burden? Right? And so, these are things I was asking myself as I was going through this, and so I'm just kind of sharing them with you. So, okay, chapter 12. And Lauren had kind of brought this up a little bit last week. It's the chapter with Miriam and Aaron. Right, and I don't have an answer for Lauren's question. Because Lauren had asked, why did Miriam get leprosy and Aaron didn't? And at the end of the day, I'm like, I don't know. You know, I could come up with a reason that I think, but I don't want you to like hold on to it and say, well, that's I don't know, right? So I'll read a little bit of this, and it says, and Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman, and they said, hath the Lord indeed spoken? Only by Moses hath he not spoken by us? And the Lord heard it. So basically they're murmuring. And I don't have a whole lot of time to read it, but you can go back and read it. They're murmuring, they're complaining within themselves. You know, God can probably use somebody else other than just Moses. Is kind of what they're getting at. And let's see, where am I getting to? It goes down. God calls Moses, Miriam, and Aaron all together at the tabernacle. And so basically he says, you know, I'm going to bring the cloud down and we're going to sort this thing out, right? And when the smoke clears, you know, per se, Miriam has leprosy and Aaron doesn't, you know, but they're complaining. And so that was the question that Lauren had said. Why did she get leprosy and he didn't? I don't know. I really did try to like look into this and try to find an answer, and I don't have one. But here's kind of what God was giving me. So you get into verse, say, 13. Once again, this is what Moses does. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, heal her now, O God, I beseech thee. And this is where Holly's question. I heard her ask you this. It was right out of this chapter, wasn't it?
No, but
it wasn't.
I'm seeing this.
Oh.
First thought of today's reading in Deuteronomy.
Oh. And it said, and the Lord said unto Moses, if the father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that, let her be received again. So basically, Moses prays, and God's like, there's a way we deal with this thing. You put them out of the camp for 7 days. If the leprosy goes away, they're clean. If not, then they're unclean. You know, go back to your very monotonous reading in Leviticus, and you can find out the out of the camp 7 days. But so here's the question that I was kind of asking myself, right? Is am I just looking to see what God's? So here's the question: am I spectating or participating? Am I spectating or participating? And so what I mean by that is, Moses had every right to just stand back and say, you kind of got what's coming to you. You know, you're going to be murmuring to me or to God about me and this, that, and the other. And that's just kind of, you know, we'll call it karma, right? You know, that's just what happens. But instead, Moses, he's active. He wants to be a part. Instead of saying, you know, that's just part of what happens, I'm just going to stand back and watch, and you know, you reap what you sow. Instead, he's actively doing something, right? He knows that he can't heal the leprosy himself, so what's he do? He beseeches God, right? There's a lot of things going around. There's a lot of things going on in the church that we can just say, well, I'm glad that's happening, right? Whether it's good or bad, I'm glad that I'm glad that things are getting done. I'm glad that ministry's happening, you know, but I'm just kind of busy, you know, with everything I got. Am I spectating? Am I just watching what everybody else is doing, saying, man, they look busy? Or am I actively participating? Am I taking an active role in what God has called me to do, right? We know that God, Romans 12:1 is, you know, where it's at. You know, God has asked us to give our entire life, and that's the least we can do. All right, so that was just another kind of quick question as I was going through some of these chapters. Am I spectating or am I participating? I'm going to look into the spit in the face thing, right? Because that was the question that she asked, right?
This kind of answers it.
Oh, okay.
And because it says, if her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed? Yeah. I think it's a cultural thing, yeah. But I think that it's a... The thing Holly was talking about was a very public thing. It was before the elders. Mm. Her husband had died. Her husband's brother did not want to raise up a child through her like he ought to.
Right.
So the punishment was to bring the brother before the elders. So this is very public. And she was to loose the shoe off his foot and spit in his face. And so I think it was a very shameful public thing.
I kind of heard her say something about the spit in the face thing. And I was like, oh, I'm going to hit that today anyway. So
I think you have to probably study some Jewish traditions and cultures.
I'm definitely not Jewish, in case anybody's wondering. Just throwing that out there. I'm definitely...
Have you ever had any of his Lauren spit in your face?
I have a...
I just told him that I would never.
The most Jewish thing that I have is I have this little beanie that fits really tight on my head and it looks like a yarmulke. That's the only thing I got, right? And my wife is the one who said that that's what it looks like. But
I sent him a text. I was like, you left your yarmulke at home, and he was like...
I thought spell check had caught something, and I'm like, I totally don't know what you're talking about. It's a really thin beanie that we can wear under our hard hats at work, and so yeah, that's all the Jewish I got for me is my little yarmulke. So has nothing to do with anything. Numbers chapter 13. You guys, most of you know this story, and so I'm going to just kind of reference the story. Obviously, in verse 1 it says, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, said, send out thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I gave unto the children of Israel, of every tribe of their fathers, send ye a man. So, okay, hey, Moses, I want you to get one guy from every tribe, there's 12 tribes, send them into the land, spy it out, right? I've taught this before, but there's some things I want to pull out at the end of it. So, he does, he sends them out, he gives everybody their name, because, you know, that's what the first few books of the Old Testament are about. Very detailed, right? We got the name and the tribe that they all come from. Okay, so fast forward to verse 21. So they went up, talking about the 12 guys who went out, right? And searched the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob, as men came from Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the children of Anak. If you study that children of Anak thing, they are giants, literal giants, right? You can study, you can reference that back to Genesis. And so that's what that means when they talk about the children of Anak, or however it's pronounced. They are literal giants, right? So just a little side note there. I do not know.
But I don't know the answer to something, but I say that's a really good study. You should do that.
You can go clear back to Genesis chapter 6 and learn about the giant. There were giants in the land in those days, and it's also, you can get into some really crazy study in the commingling of the sons of God and the... Yeah, so basically the fallen angels are reproducing with the literal human race on earth, and it's a really jacked up deal. If you want to get really deep into study, that's kind of where that goes back to. But anyway, they're large. Like I'm not thinking they're like, yeah, I've heard it reference that.
We were talking one night, I was reading, and it was talking about this guy's bed, one of the giants' bed, and the width of his own bed was, I don't remember, it was crazy. His bed alone was like 14 or 15 foot long, and then it was, I don't remember. I sat down and figured it out.
Yeah.
Numbers 19 to 20 is what they believed.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that's what they're talking about there. It says, the children of Anak, verse 23, and they came to the brook of Eshcol and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, right? So I think of a cluster of grapes like I roll in a Price Chopper and like I get my bag of grapes and I carry them out and it says one cluster of grapes. Now I'm guessing that my cluster of grapes that I buy at Price Chopper is cut out of a larger cluster of grapes is what I'm guessing. Because it says that that they bear it between two upon a staff. So, meaning they put this cluster like on this rod and it took two guys to carry it. That's how big the fruit was there. Like that's how great everything was growing and that's the picture that God portrays of how great this land is that He's promised to them, right? These 12 spies go out, they cut down this cluster of grapes that it takes two guys to carry. And it says, and they brought the pomegranates and the figs. Verse 25, and they returned from searching the land after 40 days. Okay, well, it sounds like a good deal, right? Everything was good. But, and when they came, verse 26, and when they came to Moses, to Aaron, and to all the congregation of the children of Israel, and to the wilderness of Paran, and to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, and all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land, people were probably like, yes, God's finally going to come through, right? Because all they could think was that God wasn't coming through, except for He just provided for them forever. And showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we came into the land, whether thou sendest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey. Well, what do you know? That's what God said it was going to do. And this is the fruit of it. Now, if they would have stopped there, praise the Lord, right? But here's where mankind steps in. Here's where our logic steps in. And I'll say my logic, because I'm going to just guess that you guys don't ever have this problem where you try to overthink what God has told you to do, right? You don't ever try to just think, well, I think we could do it better if we did. But here's what happens. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. Now, the reason they're talking about that is because they were giants. Now, okay, I get it. Big guys, right? And the Amalekites dwell in the land. So they come up with all the reasons in the world why, yeah, it's exactly like God said it would be, except for He just basically set us up for failure because we can't go take it. They're doomed, right? They bring a bad report to all these people. In verse 30, it says, and Caleb, you always want to be like Caleb. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. What did he see that the rest of them didn't? He saw that God was able to take care of them from the time they left Egypt to now. So why would he stop then? Right? He didn't see things in the physical, oh my gosh, woe is me, we'll never be able to. He said, God's called us to do it, so why wouldn't we? Right? Like he had this I don't even know the word I'm looking for. He was downloaded. You know, I can't even think of the verse right now. Faithful is he that calleth you, who also will do it. Right? In the New Testament, it's in Thessalonians, right? Yeah. Yeah. It's like God had given him this verse before it was ever even written, right? Faithful is he that calleth you, who also will do it. He's like, God has called us to do this. Why wouldn't we do it? Right? Verse 31. But the men that went up with him said, we're not able to go up against this people, for they're stronger than we. And they brought an evil report of the land that they had searched the children, saying, the land though through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people we saw are great men of stature. They're scared, right? They're scared. And so here's the question I've always asked myself this question when I read this, and I hope you guys ask yourself when you read this too. Do I stand with the 10 defeated or the 2 victorious? Because it was Caleb and Joshua, right? There were 2 of them that were like, let's just go and do this thing, right? So, do I stand with the 10 defeated? God, I know that you want me to go and get the gospel of the world. God, I know that you want me to share the gospel with my family. God, I know that you want me to be in the ministry. I know that you want me to do all of these things that you're calling me to do. But it is impossible. It is absolutely impossible. I've got too much on my plate. I just can't do it, right? The things that those 10 guys were saying were all true. They had just simply forgot about the fact that God was God. Right? That's the only thing that they'd forgotten was that, God was God. He was on my side. Right? Yeah, the people were huge. They had every reason not to go, except for they had God on their side. Are you living your life defeated? I can't do that. I can't do that. Or are you just like, I've got God on my side, I'm going to go. I'm going to do, and whatever that, I'm just, okay, here we go. Sign me up, right? Sign me up. God's not looking for ability, He's looking for availability, right? He doesn't need us to be awesome at what we do. He just wants us to be there so we can do it, so He can do it through us, right? And then chapter 14. I've got three questions out of this chapter. This is kind of what started the whole thing. I was going to go and I wanted to pull some of these questions out of this, and I was like, well, I've got some other things in a couple chapters before that. So chapter 14. So this is right after the 10 of them are like, we can't go. If they're too big, we're not doing it, right? Chapter 14. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. They were defeated, right? We can't go. God brought us out here to die. Yeah, because that's exactly how God is. And all the children of Israel murmured, no, not them, against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness. Woe is us, right? We should have just died in Egypt. We at least had food there. All they did was complain. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? Now they're hacked off. And they said one another, let us make a captain and let us return to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron, you know, instead of being like, fine, go, you guys are not smart, right? They do what they always do. If you were to underline every time, and I've started doing this, that it says that Moses and Aaron fell on their face, sometimes that's what you got to do for the people. You just got to fall on your face and pray for them. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their face before the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. These are the two guys that went, said we could go, right? And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. Like, you guys are totally missing the boat. This is a good land. We need to go and do this. Here's the first question I got in verse 8. If the Lord delight in us, then He will bring us into the land and give it us, a land that floweth milk and honey. Here's your first question. Do I trust God? Right? Because I wanted to say, you know, does the Lord delight in me? But it's like, at the end of the day, that's not what He's asking. He's saying that God has already said He's going to do this. And because it's like one of those if-then kind of statements. If this happens, then this will happen. Well, God has already said that we're His chosen people. Right? We're not the nation of Israel, but I'm talking about them at this time. You know, I'm using this as, you know, a spiritual example for us in the New Testament. But if the Lord delights in us, He already says that He does, then He's going to do it. It just boils down to, do I trust God? Well, yeah. Yes. Jesus, right? That's the answer. Jesus. Yeah, we're supposed to, but do we? Do I trust God? And then in verse 9, here's your second question. So He says, if the Lord delight in us, then He'll bring us into the land. Verse 9, only rebel not against the Lord. Neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them. The Lord is with us. Fear them not. He says, only rebel ye not against the Lord. Am I rebelling against the Lord? Right? So that's my question. Am I rebelling? I don't think so. I think I'm trying to serve and, you know, be a minister and do all these things, but if I'm not trusting the promises that God's given me, then I'm in rebellion. Now think about that for a minute. If I don't simply trust in the promises that He's giving me, that He has given me, to live victorious, to, you know, trust everything He's, then I'm in rebellion. Right? I am in rebellion. And that's not a place to be if you study that out in the Bible. Rebellion's not a place to be. So it doesn't turn out well. Verse 10, it says, but all the congregation bade stone them with stones. They're so mad at them, they're going to stone these guys. Right? God doesn't let that happen. God gets really, really irritated at the whole situation. So much so that his punishment is what? That Joshua and Caleb are the only two that are going to get to see the land. He basically says, everybody that's 20 years old or older will die in the wilderness. You guys are going to wander in the wilderness until you die of old age. And when everybody that's 20 years old or older dies off, then I'll let them go into the land. I'll let your children go. Right? Because you're so rebellious. And here's the last question. Fast forward to 32. But as for you, he's talking to the guys who didn't want to go, right? And all the people that listened to him. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness. That's what I was just talking about. Verse 33. And your children shall wander in the wilderness. And your children shall wander. I've got written, because I don't have a big, I mean, this is my bad, so I write, like, our bad decisions affect our children. Right? Our bad decisions affect our children. The last question I got are my decisions causing my children to wander? And I'd be like, I don't have kids, so check on that one, right? No, are my bad decisions, the way that I'm leading my family, the way that I'm living my life, the way that I'm following or not following God, are they causing my children to wander? Now, obviously, that's not what we want, but this chapter is a really good picture of if we're not doing what God told us to do, if we're not trusting in the promises that He's got, verse 33, and your children shall wander. It's pretty black and white. Right? It's pretty black and white. And so those are just some things that, you know, as I was going through Numbers here recently, I remembered that Numbers isn't the book that I struggle with. It's the book of Leviticus. I really do love the book of Numbers. Now, there's some things in there that are kind of hard to get through, but there's a lot of stuff you can pull out of this, guys. Now, obviously, we are not the nation of Israel, right? We don't get those promises, but we're promised something far greater in the New Testament through Christ. We have to live victorious. We have to say, you know what? I want to trust what God's telling me to do, and I want to do it. And that might be hard, and that might mean I need to change some things, but oh, here I am, right? What did Isaiah say? He's like, here am I, send me, right? He stands before God himself and he says, here am I, send me. Now, you might be like, I don't want to be a missionary. That's not what I'm talking about. Just be a leader. And be a servant. Right? Start there. Whatever that means, right? Here am I, send me. I just wanted to encourage you guys in some of this because this is what we're reading. We're pushing through and we're reading it, right? You know, 2 or 3, sometimes 4 chapters a day, and we're reading it as a class and pull some things out of there, right? Allow the Word of God to transform your life. Don't just zombie this thing, right? Because that's what happens. We look at it and we're like, that's 1 chapter. That's 2 chapters. That's 3 chapters. My grocery list is made. I know what I'm doing tomorrow. I have no idea what I just read. I only say that because I've done it. No, I don't make the grocery list, right? No. But I'm thinking, take some time with God. It doesn't take a lot. Get in the Word. Allow it to transform your life. Allow it to have questions pop up, right? And just things that are like, huh, how am I doing? What is God trying to show me here? You know, and we'll just kind of go from there. So that's just some things that I had. I don't really have anything else. Anybody else got any questions on the reading, or we can be done? We'll just put this to my account that I'm 4 minutes early. So next week when I'm 4 minutes late, it's like us all even. So
those rollover minutes.
Yeah. So. All right. Where's our reading at right now, Paige? Where are we supposed to be today?
Deuteronomy 26.
Deuteronomy 26. So you need to be started on the book of Joshua by what day?
Oh, I'm sorry. I have it right here. The 28th, Joshua 1 through 3.
Yeah, so...
Do you have
a
schedule?
Oh. Shoot, we should have had that today. I forgot.
I have it on my computer at home.
Yeah. Just
yeah.
Bring one copy and we can just take pictures of it.
Yeah. Well, she just emailed it to me.
We can text it out. I'll take a picture of it. We'll text it out. That's just as easy, right? Because everybody uses text more than anything. Just take a picture of it and text it. Yeah. That's a good idea. Okay. All right. I'm going to pray and we'll get out of here. Father God, I love you. I thank you for the day. I thank you for your word. I pray that you would just continue to use it to just mold and change our lives to be more like you. I pray that you would use it to pierce our hearts, to stir us up unto good works, Lord. I pray that you would just send us out this week as lights in a dark world, that you would transform the world just by the folks here in this class. And so I do pray that you would just use us in any way that you would wish. In Christ's name, amen.